We're sitting here meditating because we want to be here. Nobody's forced us. We're not here with a sense of obligation that we have to be here. But we've seen for ourselves that meditation is good. It's good for the mind. And it spreads out its good influences in many areas of our lives, even to other people. There are the people who benefit because we're meditating in blatant and subtle ways. The most blatant way is that if we can cut down in the amount of greed, anger, and delusion in our actions, or motivating our actions, other people are going to be happier. This is a common pattern throughout the Buddha's teachings. The practice is voluntary. After all, the Buddha did not pretend to be a god who had created us or wanted to impose his will on anybody. And so when he taught, he wasn't teaching with the sense that other people were obligated to follow what he had to say. He never tried to say, well, you should be a Buddhist, or once you're a Buddhist, you're obligated to do X, Y, or Z. He left it up to each person to take what he or she found in the Dharma that was useful and to apply it in his or her life. Sometimes you hear people berating people who sit and meditate that they're not doing enough for other people, that they're obligated. Once you become a Buddhist, you're obligated to get yourself together as a decent, self-respecting religion. After all, other religions have various projects by which they help the world. Why aren't the Buddhists doing that? It's not that the Buddha didn't encourage generosity or encourage helping other people, but he encouraged it that it be done with a volunteer spirit. Again, we're under no obligation to the Buddha. We're under no obligation to the world that we've got to help them. The only obligation the Buddha talks about is your obligation to your parents. That you owe the fact of your life to them. You owe the fact that you're able to talk and walk and learn all the basic skills. Whether they were good parents or bad parents, you still have a certain debt to them. But even the monastic hierarchy, when a student becomes apprenticed to a teacher, the student is allowed at some point, if he feels that the teacher's instructions are not in the student's best interest, to leave, find another teacher. This is why hierarchy in the Buddhist teachings is very different from hierarchy in some of the things we've seen in the West. The person at the top realizes that people are there voluntarily, and that if his decisions are oppressive, people have the right to leave. And when we bow down to one another, in line with seniority, seniority is not an expression that someone is better than anyone else. It's a very neutral category. We've got some old monks who've been around for a long time who are not especially inspiring. But for ease of life in the community, it's good to bow down, even to people like that. The Buddha was once asked by a king, to whom should I give? Or to whom should a gift be given? And the Buddha said, essentially, wherever your heart feels inspired, or you feel the gift would be well used. In other words, it's no obligation that you have to give to this or that purpose or this or that cause. It's totally voluntary. Then the king went on to say, well, when a gift is given, where is it given so that it bears great fruit? And the Buddha said, well, that's a different question. If you want the gift to lead to the highest happiness, you give to those who are without defilement. Again, it's up to you to choose, but if you, the Buddha simply makes a statement of fact that this is where the highest gifts are, and that's what, that's his whole pattern in his teaching. He assumes you want to be happy. So if you want to be truly happy, this is how you go about it. If you want to maximize your happiness in this world, this is how you go about it. If you want to find a happiness that goes beyond this world, this is how you go about it. The if is important there. He's not imposing these things on you. I think I've told you the story about the person who once complained about the first line in the Metta Sutta. This is what should be done by those who want to aim at a state of peace. He said, well, wait a minute, what's this should in here? I thought Buddhism didn't have any shoulds. The should there is conditional. If you want to aim at the state of peace, this is what you have to do, because this is the way things are. But the choice is yours. So remember that as we go through the day. Our generosity should be inspired by a voluntary spirit. Even the precepts should be inspired by a voluntary spirit. The Buddha says at one point, when you observe the precepts without exception, you're giving the gift of unlimited safety to all beings, and you're one of those all beings that is made safe by your gift. You don't follow the precepts because somebody up there said you have to. You follow the precepts because you see that they lead to happiness. And the same with the meditation. Meditation is a gift, both to yourself and to the people around you. Now, there are times when it may not seem like the most pleasant thing to do, and the meditation is a long haul. But even in cases like that, you have to learn how to inspire desire. This is what Buddha said the right effort is. The right effort is when you can generate desire to do what you know is skillful, so that you can maintain that sense of voluntary spirit. In Thailand, they use a pun when they're talking about the practice. The word for practice, patipat, can also mean when you look after somebody's needs. You patipat that person. And many times the Ajahns will say, when you're here practicing the Dharma, remember you're here to patipat your own mind. You're looking after the needs of your mind. Your mind needs training. Your mind needs to find the source of true happiness if you want to be happy. So you're not here under any obligation that you're being forced to practice. You're doing it because the mind is going to benefit. And so to stick with the practice, you keep looking for ways to remind yourself of that fact so you can keep the juices flowing. And keep a sense of good humor as you're going through the difficult stages. This property of good humor is an important part of volunteer spirit, or voluntary spirit. It keeps you alive. There was a British explorer back in the 19th century who was staying in a fort on the Manitoba coast of the Hudson Bay. He had heard that there might be a source of copper up in the Northwest Territories, and he wanted to check it out. The only way he was going to get there was to go with a band of Dene Indians. He was one of the few Westerners who actually gave himself over totally to the protection of the Indians, relied on them to get him there and to get him back. And he noticed as they were going along, there'd be days when they couldn't, and no matter how good their hunting skills were, there was no food. Just tightened their belts, like the hobbits, tightened their belts and kept on going. But he also noticed that in the days when there was the least food, that was when there was the most joking among the Indians. They realize that when things get tough, you've got to do your best to keep your spirits high. And to learn to look at the whole situation with good humor. So So this quality of generating desire is an important part of the effort on the practice, to make it less effortful and more effortless. To keep remembering you're here because you want to be here. At least part of your mind realizes that this is good for you and good for the people around you. And when you can live this life with this voluntary spirit, this sense of giving a gift, it helps to break down barriers. It breaks down barriers inside, breaks down barriers between you and the other people around you. Our lives in the monetary economy are basically built around the idea that there are certain things you will do because you're paid to do them, and other things you pay to do. But the fact that there's payment going around there means that there's a barrier. But here we're living in an economy of gifts. You look around you, the whole monastery, everything here is a gift. As we saw this evening, the people who came to help build the shed, they weren't being paid to do it. Nobody's forcing them to do it. It's a gift of time and energy. Every building we have here, every little piece of decoration, every Buddha image, it's all a gift. The fact that it is a gift helps to break down barriers. This is why the monks in Thailand often refer to their lay supporters in the same way they would refer to family, relatives, yad, yom, whether they're really yad or not. In the technical sense, there is a sense of extended family. Sometimes this may mean that the monastery is not run like a tight ship. I've known people with military backgrounds who express despair over how the monastery is run. But it runs on namjai, the Thai word for voluntary spirit or good spirit in the heart, good humor in the heart. And that's a fuel that doesn't run dry. As long as we learn how to respect one another's namjai and learn how to keep it going with good humor and the sense of voluntary spirit, the sense of gift-giving. We're doing good because it's a good thing to do. It makes us happy. Always keep that point in mind.